Text number 37. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. My dear King Parikshit, in the province of Yamaraj, there are hundreds and thousands of hellish planets. I guess that's a lot. The impious people I have mentioned, and also those I have not mentioned, must all enter these various planets according to the degree of their impiety. Those who are pious, however, enter other planetary systems, namely the planets of the demigods. Nevertheless, both the pious and impious are again brought to earth after the results of their pious or impious acts are exhausted. Purport, this corresponds to the beginning of Lord Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita, Tata de Hantara Prapti. Within this material world, one is simply meant to change from one body to another in different planetary systems. Urdhvam gachchanti sattvasta. Those in the mode of goodness are elevated to the heavenly planets. Adho gachchanti tamasaha. Similarly, those too engrossed in ignorance enter the hellish planetary systems. Both of them, however, are subjected to the repetition of birth and death. In Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that even one who is very pious returns to earth after his enjoyment in the higher planetary systems is over. Kshinye punye martya lokam vishanti. Therefore, going from one planet to another does not solve the problems of life. The problems of life will only be solved when we no longer have to accept a material body. This can be possible if one simply becomes Krishna conscious. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verse 9, Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tattva taha taktva deham punar janma naitimam eti sorarjuna. Quote, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. End quote. This is the perfection of life and the real solution to life's problems. We should not be eager to go to the higher heavenly planetary systems, nor should we act in such a way that we have to go to the hellish planets. The complete purpose of this material world will be fulfilled when we resume our spiritual identities and go back home, back to Godhead. The very simple method for doing this is prescribed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarvadharman prityagya mamekam sharanam vraja. One should be neither pious nor impious. One should be a devotee and surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna. This surrendering process is also very easy.
Really?
Even a child can perform it. Man mana bhava mad bhakto mad yaji mam namaskuru. One must always simply think of Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One should become Krishna's devotee, worship him, and offer obeisances to him. Thus, one should engage all the activities of his life in the service of Lord Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So this is the conclusion of the chapter, and we see that the point is that there is no real difference between upper planetary systems or the lower heavenly regions or hellish planets. That's the message. There's really no difference. It's all material. And Prabhupada, he opens up his purport by saying that this statement that we're hearing from Shukadeva Goswami, he says this corresponds to the beginning of Krishna's instructions, Tata de Hantura Prapti. Seems like somehow the Prabhupada always brings us to that verse, somehow or other. Dehi no smi yata dehi. The idea is that the soul is changing bodies, and the soul changes his bodies due to the influence of his previous karmas. So if the soul was pious, then he goes to the higher planetary systems where the mode of goodness is predominant. And if the soul was impious, then he goes to the lower planetary systems when there's a background of or a strong predominance of the tamagun. And then after one suffers the results in the hellish planets, or he enjoys the results in the heavenly planets, then again he returns to the middle planetary systems where the mode of passion is predominant, and he accumulates some more activities by which he can go up or down. And this is the routine of material life. It's redundant, in other words. And So that's the first point brought out in the purport. And so there, Prabhupada makes the point that thereby, by going up or down in the merry-go-round of material life, one doesn't actually solve the problems of life. So how does one actually solve the problems of life? He should think of Krishna. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatutaha taktva deham punar janma. By understanding the nature of Krishna's activities and his birth and truth, the word tatutaha mentioned by acharyas means with profound sort of faith, a profound faith in the reality of the eternality of Krishna's leelas. Then by understanding that, by identifying with that progressively through the process of bhakti sadhana, then he can go out of the material world, which is a place of misery. Abrahma bhuvana loka punar, what is that? Abarjuna arjuna punar jama. I can't think of the verse now. I like this verse from Bhagavad Gita. This verse says, I often mention that this is the verse where Krishna says there's no room for sightseeing. Oftentimes when people come to Chicago for the first time from foreign countries, they want us to take them downtown Chicago for sightseeing, see the lake. And I always say, well, Krishna doesn't recommend sightseeing in the Bhagavad Gita. And they find out, well, where do you find such a line of thought in Bhagavad Gita? So this is the verse, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka. What is that? Punar Vartinarjuna? No, that's that. Who knows the verse? Who knows? Then Mamu Peti Tukonte Apuna Jamana Vidite. Krishna says, from the topmost planet down in the bottom, all are places of misery. So what's the point in investigating an environment where everywhere you go is misery? So that's the simple message given here by Shukadeva Goswami. So then Prabhupada augments that by saying, we simply have to become a devotee, and that's very easy, simply by surrendering to Krishna. You know, no problem there. Simply surrender to Krishna, and one surrenders to Krishna by always thinking of Krishna. So no problem there either. You should think of nothing but Krishna. And that can be accomplished by simply chanting Hare Krishna throughout the day and night. Kirtan Yasada Hari. And that way you actually solve the problems of life. The problems of life are not solved by performing activities in the mode of goodness and being promoted to the heavenly regions, nor is it solved by performing impious activities and being promoted to the hellish regions. The problems of life are solved by becoming Krishna conscious. So that's a simple message. Any questions, comments, concerns? Yeah.
There's no difference between like higher planetary systems and lower planetary systems. Why is the like main goal in like the Christian philosophy to avoid going to hell? Like they
who
scare,
said that's the main goal?
Well, most people, if you come from a Christian background, like it's kind of like the boogeyman concept of if you don't do this or do that, then you're gonna go to hell and suffer
well,
for
that's
it.
The
so that's the basis of their process. So my thing is, most people who are of religious background, that's their whole.
Speak up a little bit.
I'm sorry. Most people who come from a religious background, whether Christian or Islam or Judea, it speaks about this place of hell as something to avoid. Some people are looking more or less for a better, I guess, existence after they pass out of this body. So how do you speak to someone in reference to what you were saying, is there's no difference between a heavenly planetary or lower planetary system. It should be transcendental. And how do you get that to, I guess, resonate with that person?
Well, it's probably with great difficulty, I would imagine. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that there's three types of understanding. Understanding the mode of passion, understanding the mode of goodness, understanding the mode of ignorance. So whenever we're speaking something, another thing is often understood according to how the modes are influencing someone's consciousness. And so therefore, in order to get people to understand even the most basic point of Krishna consciousness is usually a daunting task. To understand it in truth, as Krishna says, to understand anything in truth is always a daunting task because the living entity, under the modes of nature, he gets his different understandings. Just like if someone in the mode of ignorance or someone in the mode of passion hears about Krishna's leelas, they get another understanding than someone in the mode of goodness and someone who's transcendental. I often mention one of our devotees who recently left his body about a year ago. He joined in the prison ministry, and when the devotees sent him one picture of Krishna with the Ashtasakis, He thought that this is what you were rewarded by going back to the spiritual world. So he told all his inmates that this is Krishna's philosophy, that when you go back to the spiritual world, you get to have so many ashtasakis for your enjoyment. The eight primary gopis of Krishna, for Krishna's enjoyment. So he understood it that way. That's due to the influence of the mode of passion. There was a misunderstanding. So to get anyone to understand anything transcendental is a daunting task, and there's a process for doing that. Generally, the basic point is one has to understand that what is the difference between eternal objects, or sat, and non-eternal objects, asat. That's the basic principle. There's a difference between sat and asat. And once someone can understand that, then the other points become quite easy to understand. But to appreciate that realization, to appreciate that message is not so easy. So I would imagine that you could convey it with great difficulty. You know, depending on the willingness of the person to understand. There's always a primacy of will in understanding anything. If there's any incredulity, I mean, if someone is not willing to understand, they will not get it. Otherwise, if they want to understand, in due course of time, they will come to understand. There's a difference between temporary objects and eternal objects, and we should go after the eternal ones.
I think we missed about five texts because Maharaj finished with text 31.
That's what I thought. And then yesterday
we did 36.
Yeah.
So maybe if you are inclined, you could just read, if we want to, read through 31 to 35.
31 to 35. Okay, well, I guess we'll hear.
I just noticed we missed it.
So. Well, they were Christian. They might have appreciated it. We should have read it for fun, just to see the reactions. All right. We're no fun in the Hare Krishna temple. So, some more hell consciousness here. Translation, this is text 31. There are men and women in this world who sacrifice human beings to Bhairava or Bhadrakali and then eat their victim's flesh. Those who perform such sacrifices are taken after death to the abode of Yamaraj, where their victims, having taken the form of Rakshasas, cut them to pieces with sharpened swords. Just as in this world the man-eaters drank their victims' blood, dancing and singing in jubilation, their victims now enjoy drinking the blood of the sacrificers and celebrating in the same way. Next verse. In this life, some people give shelter to animals and birds that come to them for protection in the village or forest. And after making them believe that they will be protected, such people pierce them with lances or threads and play with them like toys, giving them great pain. After death, such people are brought by the assistance of Yamaraj to the hell, known as Shulapotra, where their bodies are pierced with sharp needle-like lances. They suffer from hunger and thirst, and sharp-beaked birds, such as vultures and herons, come at them from all sides to tear at their bodies. Tortured and suffering, they can then remember the sinful activities they committed in the past. Next verse. Those who in this life are like envious serpents, always angry and giving pain to other living entities, fall after death into the hell known as Dandashuka. My dear king, in this hell there are serpents with fins to eat such sinful persons, just as snakes eat mice. Next verse. Those who in this life confine other living entities in dark wells, granaries or mountain caves, are put after death into the hell known as Avata Nirodhana. There they themselves are pushed into dark wells where poisonous fumes and smoke suffocate them, and they suffer very severely. Next verse. A householder who receives guests or visitors with cruel glances. You don't look properly at someone. As if to burn them to ashes, is put into the hell called Paryavartana, where he is gazed at by hard-eyed vultures, herons, crows, and similar birds, which suddenly swoop down and pluck out his eyes with great force. That's interesting, hell. This one has a purport. According to the Vedic etiquette, even an enemy who comes to a householder's home should be received in such a gentle way that he forgets that he has come to the home of an enemy. A guest who comes to one's home should be received very politely. If he is unwanted, the householder should not stare at him with blinking eyes. For one who does so will be put into the hell known as Paryavartana after death. And there, many ferocious birds like vultures, crows, and cockneys will suddenly come upon him and pluck out his eyes. So don't look mean at someone. Yeah. Yeah, there's a question. Can someone?
Up for the darshan at 12:30 or 12:45, and they just want to come down and take lunch. So there's been a variety of opinions about what to do in this situation, because the temple devotees will be coming down a little down and pack up, and there won't be much left for the temple devotees. At the same time, there is this etiquette that we should be very respectful towards guests. There's also the practical concern. So
there's a little table over there. It's got a little thing on top of the table. It's got sweets. That's for the guests. That's great. That's respect. And if you go to India, most of the temples, they don't just allow the guests to just walk in and eat whatever they want, for example. They have there's some Mahaprasadam stands are there. They want Mahaprasad. And they usually have a little snack that they can take. You know, some peanuts or some rock candy. In some places, it might be like a small sandesh or something. So, and we're facilitating the darshan of the deities. So, what more can they ask for? Yeah.
Why do the guests is given such a special position? If they come in your house, you have to be so gentle to them.
I don't know, to be honest with you. Given such a special position, they're considered a manifestation of God. When guests, well, the guests who arrive unexpectedly, I forget this, what it's called, Atithi Deva, huh? Atithi Deva Bhavan, he said. I think underlying that, in principle, the idea is just respect. The culture is a culture of respect and giving respect to all entities, and there's a protocol in the culture or how to respect different types of persons. So this was part of their culture. This is how you treat a guest. This is how you respect a guest. This is how you respect a brahmana. This is how you respect a kshatriya. So the culture was based on respect, and there was protocols for how to respect one another. We don't have such a culture nowadays, so it's hard to understand these types of character points. But besides that point, I wouldn't know anything more technical than that. You want to share something on that?
Beginning sent forth generation of men and demigods along with sacrifice. Mm-hmm. By this you will be happy in this world and achieve liberation. Mm-hmm. So the way it's set up that Krishna wants this world to be a place where people can, they don't have to perhaps undergo so much severe suffering, rather it's a place where you can, if you properly take to the principles of sacrifice,
sure,
then you live in this world and you achieve the proper destination after death. So it seems that Veda culture is set up so that anyone in any position of life, they're not like just down and out, like miserable, but sure, if they follow the Varnashram system, they can live a peaceful, happy life. You know, like someone who's doing Madhukari, they can go and, you know, the whole system is constructed with the aim of elevating everyone. So it's not like here, you know, the comparison is given in the West. You know, you got a big barbed wire fence, beware of dog.
Sure.
You know, someone comes, so I was just thinking of that connection.
Yeah. Anyone behind you?
Hey, Krishna. Yeah, so how do we, I've heard people say before, the like, how do I understand how to deal with bad things happening? You know, like the material duality portion of like heaven and hell. How do we explain to them that they shouldn't focus on the bad things in life and not focus on the good things in life, but just focus our minds towards Krishna?
Well, how emotionally attached are they to their subtle bodies? becomes the real question, because the reason we get all bent out of shape when something bad happens to us, or conversely, we become totally happy when something good happens to us, is because we're attached to our subtle bodies. Because the experience of happiness and distress in the material world is due to the subtle body, the mind and false ego particularly. The combination of the two gives a context for which we're enjoying this world. If we didn't have a false ego and a mind, then we wouldn't have any orientation to enjoy or suffer in the material world. Does that make sense? The false ego is giving the conceptual orientation by which we can enjoy or suffer. So if we didn't have that, there would be no context for that, and we'll be self-realized. So then the question is, how attached are people to their subtle bodies, to their false egos, and to their minds, and the type of experience that's creating for them of enjoyment or suffering? And the answer is usually, they're very attached. So then you say, how do you explain? Like my answer to Terrence, probably with great difficulty, because people are not willing to relinquish their attachment to the bodily concept of life, which includes their subtle body. So if you try to explain it to them when all involved, then they don't do well to accept the explanation. Just like Arjuna in the beginning of chapter 2, where Krishna chastises Arjuna, this is just weakness of heart, this is not befitting of the Aryans, this is not proper to your nature, and so on. Arjuna wasn't able to accept that. He continued to argue with Krishna, because there was attachment to the emotional experience of killing Bhishma and Drona and so on. So I can use your question is, how to explain? My answer is probably with great difficulty, if you can explain it at all whatsoever. Otherwise, the answer is the Bhagavad Gita itself, where Krishna talks about the modes of nature. This is the nature of the modes of nature. And then once someone knows that this is just the nature of the reality, then they can become a little aloof from it. It's like, it's angry about fire burning. You know, why does cooling? It's like, well, fire burns. And so then once they understand fire burns, then instead of getting frustrated about it, they can use the fire for other things that can be progressive. So similarly, once we understand this is the nature of the material world, this is how it operates, then that understanding of itself creates a little bit of aloofness from it when you're going through the experiences of enjoyment or suffering. You know, this is the nature of the material world. According to my karma, I'm getting some happy experience as far as my false ego will convey it to me. Or I'm getting some suffering experience, and that's how it is. And it will continue in that way, but I'm going to focus my intelligence on the absolute. But generally, we're not so smart. We're really emotionally attached individuals, so it's hard to explain these things. Any other point, question? Because Mother Maria has a question.
You said the nature of the material world is suffering. How about in the first yuga? Is it suffering as well?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, even... Okay.
Of course, in that yuga, it says that everyone is called as hamsas. There was no varnashram even in the Satya Yuga. Varnashram doesn't appear into Treta Yuga. And everyone there is practically self-realized, the vast majority of the individuals. So therefore, there can be no suffering in that sense, because they're not affected by duality. But that doesn't mean that duality has stopped existing and stopped affecting individuals, such as Ajamil. I think Ajamil pastime happens in the Satya Yuga. You know, Prahlad being tormented by Hiranyakashipu happens in the Satya Yuga, and so on. So there's the material world in principle is miserable because it's ephemeral. That's the principle of suffering. It's not really the situation that we're coming across, which we're giving so much importance to. We say it's suffering because, you know, so-and-so broke up with me. It's suffering because a car accident is suffering. That's not the principle of why it's miserable. The principle of why it's miserable, it's dukkhalayam, Krishna says, is a house of misery. But someone may say that I like it. You will meet such people like that. And then Krishna says, well, even if you like it, it's temporary, a shashvatam. This is the real reason why it's miserable, that it's temporary. Especially whatever you find attractive about the material world, you become attached to it, and then it turns into powder right before your eyes. And therefore, it's miserable. So because in Satya Yuga, it's also a temporary atmosphere, however pleasant the environment, then it's temporary, it goes away. So if you're attached to that, it becomes the womb which gives birth to the son of dukkha, suffering. Krishna's language in the Bhagavad Gita, dukkha yonaya evate. So I like that. Nothing to be attached to in the material world. Of course, I remember reading in the 11th canto that if we were all to be in the Satya Yuga, we may have a hard time appreciating that message. Someone could say, the material world is suffering. No. So then in the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned, and I think it's in chapter 5 of the 11th canto, where the Navayogindras are preaching to King Nimi. And they're speaking about the age of Kali and the glory of the Sankirtan in the age of Kali. It's in chapter 5 of the 11th canto. And in one of the commentaries there, it's mentioned very nicely that the living entity should take advantage of the age of Kali to understand the principle of material existence. And so I always appreciate that idea, because in other words, in Satya Yuga, one may have a harder time appreciating the principle of material existence being miserable and full of and temporary. Whereas in Kali Yuga, there's no great difficulty, you know. If you have an internet or anything, you can just see CNN or something like that, and boom, you got it. So then the commentary, I thought it was a very profound point that we should take advantage of the age of Kali to understand the principle of material existence itself. That is a place of misery, ultimately, and it's temporary. Like that. Okay, any other points? Okay, I was going to try to finish the chapter. We only got a few more verses left. Just a couple. Anything else? No? Next verse. See, it's only 7:59. Next verse. In the beginning, the second and third cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam, I have already described how one can progress on the path of liberation. In the Puranas, the vast universal existence, which is like an egg divided into 14 parts, is described. This vast form is considered the external body of the Lord, created by his energy and qualities. It is generally called the Virata Rupa. If one reads the description of this external form of the Lord with great faith, or if one hears about it or explains it to others to propagate Bhagavad Dharma, or Krishna consciousness, his faith and devotion to spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness, will gradually increase. Although developing this consciousness is very difficult, by this process of describing the Virata Rupa, that's what's being said here, one can purify himself and gradually come to an awareness of the Supreme Absolute Truth. So purport, the Krishna Consciousness Movement is pushing forth the publication of Srimad Bhagavatam, as explained especially for the understanding of the modern civilized man, to awaken to his original consciousness. Without this consciousness, one melts into complete darkness. That's interesting. Whether one goes to the upper planetary systems or to the hellish planetary systems, he simply wastes his time. So that's the message that we're supposed to get from all this. You're simply wasting time by going up and down. Therefore, one should hear of the universal position of the Virata Rupa form of the Lord as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. That will help one save himself from material conditional life and gradually elevate him to the path of liberation so that he can go back home, back to Godhead. So any question about that? Yeah. One should hear about the Virata Rupa to understand how the material world is a waste of time. That is the message.
Okay, you say that even promotion to like heavenly planetary systems is not good or befitting of devotees. So what if a circumstance were to happen where a devotee, let's say he wasn't fully liberated in his life? Prabhupada often says in his reports that you would have to incarnate in some like aristocratic family or a family of brahmanas and you get a better birth. Mm-hmm. Who's to say, realistically speaking, that like we might be close to prima, but for some reason or other we pass out of our bodies? And will then in that case you still have some type of elevation to like let's say you don't go to Krishna Loka, but you go maybe to a planet that's a little lower than that. Could you finish your devotional service? Yeah. Not saying that you're looking for that, but you know, it's like a close but no cigar situation.
Sure. Of course, if you're that close to prema, as you say, that means that Krishna will be very much involved in one's life. Basically, after Ruchi, because according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Krishna hears the prayers of the Sharanagata, which is, one is completed the erection of Sharanagata at the stage of Ruchi, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And so after that, Krishna is really much involved in a person's life. So if someone is so close to prema, as you say, but he somehow passes out of his body without completing devotional service, then Krishna may make any sort of arrangement for him. And oftentimes it is seen in the Bhagavatam that the arrangement isn't something of a higher nature, higher planetary nature or something like that. Generally, the situation that we see in the Bhagavatam may be some type of averse situation in order to augment the feeling of separation from himself. For example, Chittaketu, he had bhava prema, because he saw the Supreme Lord face to face. It means prema, actually. But it wasn't mature. So then Krishna made an arrangement for him to be cursed by Parvati to take birth in hell, in the body of a demon. Yes, the body of a demon. Krishna's so kind. And in that body of a demon, his feeling of separation was augmented from Krishna. And that destroyed any residual, contamination that may be there. According to Madhurya Kandambi, of course, prema, there is no contamination. It said that the anarshana vritti is nullified completely at the stage of anarshana vritti, but it's nullified absolutely at the stage of vastu siddhi. This means that at the stage of prema, there is some chance that some anartha can come up again, like the influence of some aparat or something. By the stage of Vastu City, there's no question of it returning. This language is used by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So Krishna, and someone who has prema, in order to bring that prema to a state of maturity, Krishna created a situation where there's separation between him and his devotee. So that in that separation, the longing for Krishna destroys any trace of impurity. Such is the case of Chittaketu's example. Another example is given in the first canto with Narada Muni, where Narada Muni also had a beginning form of prema. Therefore, he was also able to see Vishnu face to face. But then Vishnu disappeared from his vision, said, "I will never come before you again." And the reason for this, the same reason Krishna gives practically to the gopis, is that by separation, that will bring your prema to a high state of elevation and so on. So if someone is so close to the goal of life, another example is Bharat Maharaj. He took birth as a deer with his previous consciousness. So that created a sense of really longing for Krishna. So if someone is so close to Krishna like that, Krishna takes charge. And there's a good chance he'll create a situation where you're hankering after him. There's no chance of distraction and so on.
In the first situation, you used the example of him incarnating in a demon's body.
Yeah.
So technically speaking, you can say there's no difference between a demon and like a quote-unquote demigod. Like they, in essence, can all be devotees depending on their karma.
So depending on their consciousness.
Or the consciousness.
Devotee is consciousness.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's kind of the message. Really doesn't, in one sense, it really doesn't matter what type of body you have. Of course, if you're identifying with the body, it does matter. Then it's a problem. If you have a demon's body and you identify with a demon's body, then problem. Well, you may have a demon's body, but you identify as a devotee. So then, not a problem. Although, interesting enough, he was killing demigods. You know, he was killing devotees, mixed devotees, but he was killing them. But that didn't constitute a fault because of his consciousness. So Krishna consciousness is a little bit unique. It kind of blurs the line between the moral landscape of materialistic persons and the moral landscape of transcendentalists. It's much different. It's much different. Michael Hans was there. Matt, sorry. I'm Michael Matt.
Prabhu, I remember one time hearing something in the scriptures about that a devotee doesn't even care if he goes to the hellish planets as long as he can engage in devotional service.
Yeah. Narayana Para Sarve. So, what type of devotee is the question? Anyone here cares about going to hell? The question is, what type of devotee we're talking about? We use the word devotee so generically, as if it refers to, you know, we have to specify some of these statements. You know, devotee doesn't even care if he goes to hell, so what are we talking about here? What type? Of course, in one sense, a devotee means a real devotee, a pure devotee. But because we don't normally use it always in that context, specification is always nice. How can you engage in devotional service being tortured? By smarana, by kirtana, by shravana. That's the beauty of Krishna consciousness, is that it's very easy to serve Krishna. You need only hear about Krishna, you need only chant his names. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, when he was in his final days of his Leela, it was written in one place, he said, if I cannot hear a chant about Krishna, then I will practice the Anga Smarana. You know, because if I'm not able to say anything, he said, I will just remember Krishna. Such is the simplicity of Krishna consciousness. And because Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smarnam, these are the activities of perfected souls, actually. What we practice is not the real form of it. Or let's say we practice it in a secondary function. The secondary function is to bring us to the state of love of God. And then its primary function is the activity itself. When you attain love of God, then that hearing, chanting, and remembering goes on. So your question, how can someone practice in hell? Simply by hearing, chanting, remembering. Like Prahlad Maharaj, for example. The difficulty is that we identify with our bodies quite deeply. So when we hear about people going to hell, we think that's impossible to think of Krishna. Because if someone calls us a bad name on the earth planet, it's impossible to think about Krishna because we're so attached to the body. And so we find it quite inconceivable how someone can think of Krishna. Like when you read about Prahlad Maharaj, you're like, how? Who could think about Krishna when he's being cooked like a pakora and a pot of oil, you know? All of it would be like, ah, ah. That's what, when you read the passage, that's what you're thinking. You'd just be screaming for your life. It could hardly imagine someone being cooked and just, thinking of Krishna's leelas and being in ecstasy, you know. So that's due to our attachment to the body. That's why we have to hear what a lot of faith invested, because our body concept of life makes us disbelieve some of these realities. The faith is such an important element. Yeah.
I was just kind of following up on Terrence's question, because in the Gita it says for the yoga brashta, that if he fails after short practice, then he goes to the heavenly planets and then gets another opportunity. Mm-hmm. And if he fails after long, then he can take this auspicious birth. Mm-hmm. So is that ever, I mean, going to the heavenly planets for such a long period of time, could that ever be an impediment in one's devotional progress? Because the idea is if you do even a little bit of devotional service, then you're protected. Yeah. But if you go to these heavenly planets, you're just doing like sense gratification.
Well, that doesn't mean bhakti will be lost. It may be
maybe covered
for some time. The idea of going to the heavenly regions in that section is so you can get it out of your system. That's kind of the idea of going to the heavenly regions for a long time after short practice of yoga. Is that tendency to, we have so many ideas of how we can exploit the material energy. So by going there and enjoying it, it's kind of like to get it out of your system. And then after you got out of your system, you come back to earth in an aristocratic birth or Brahmin birth, and you can perhaps focus on spiritual life. But there's always a risk in the material world. But bhakti is avyayam, as Krishna says, it's imperishable. So it's not that it will be lost at any time, but we may get distracted. And so that's always a danger for remaining in the material world. Just like one time, I've always heard like this, that a disciple told Srila Prabhupada, if I don't make it this life, next life, I'll begin from, 50% this life, next life, 51%. And Prabhupada said, if you don't make it this life, why you make it next life? You know, so Prabhupada, helped us to keep some perspective on the dangers of remaining in the material world.
One does even a little bit svalpam devotion, then he doesn't have to face the greatest type of fear, which is going down. But if a devotee practices some devotional service, and then whatever happens, maybe they fall away from the path and they do all sorts of sinful activities. What is their fate? Because we're reading about if you do this, but was that subject, if one's done devotion, they don't have to experience negative reactions for that, or how does it?
No, they may have to experience negative reactions for whatever sinful activities they've done. But there's some influence of devotional service that will that adds to their bhakti sukriti account, influencing them in future existences. Most, as per our understanding, our ability to come to Krishna consciousness is due to the background of previous impressions of devotional service, devotional sangha, some type of devotional literature or something. So even if someone becomes a devotee and then falls away for some time, whatever devotional service was rendered is imperishable, and its influence may come up later, but it can't be destroyed. The only thing that can come close to destroying something like that is aparad, but aparad also doesn't destroy it. It just keeps it deeply covered for some time, and then its influence starts to act.
Can you just review, one who performs very sinful activities, generally they go to hell first, and then they take an animal form? Or
sure. It's described like that in the 31st chapter of the 3rd canto.
The lowest animal form, or they just pick up somewhere, they get tiger?
I don't know how that goes exactly, because I don't care. I never really investigated. Because I told you, the message is very simple. Heaven or hell is the same. And so the point of the detailed discussion is not to so much help us understand the details of what body someone's going to be going through and all that. The purpose of the detailed discussion is to show us that it's all a waste of time. That this is all that's going on in the material world. The same type of suffering is going on everywhere. And therefore, those types of details. Of course, if you want to investigate it, you might guess. But in principle, the message is not so much to understand these sorts of details. Perhaps they're cool and nifty. And for those who want to know that, I'm sure you can investigate it. But the point is, how do we cultivate bhava? That's what sadhana is all about. And so less concerned with, you know, even if you get this type of body, that it's suffering. So what difference does it make? What is the real difference? Suffering is suffering. So my personal sense of it is that's the message that we really have to appreciate, that it's all suffering. And then we can focus on the absolute. Of course, if you want to investigate, I'm sure you can find someone to help with those details. Anything else? 8:15. There's one more verse left. Well, one more verse, a small purport, and then another verse with no purport. And then a note by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura. It's 8:15. Shall I finish the chapter? Might as well. Are you still awake, alive, and well? Everyone's alive and well? Alive and well? Alive and well? Okay. Or at least alive. Next verse. One who is interested in liberation, who accepts the path of liberation, and is not attracted to the path of conditioned life, is called yeti or devotee. See? Same point. Such a person should first control his mind by thinking of the Virata Rupa, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, and then gradually think of the spiritual form of Krishna, Satchit Ananda Vigraha, after hearing of both forms. Thus, one's mind is fixed in samadhi. By devotional service, one can then realize the spiritual form of the Lord, which is the destination of devotees. Thus, his life becomes successful. Purport, it is said, Mahat Sevam Dwaram Ahur Vimukti. If one wants to progress on the path of liberation, he should associate with Mahatmas, or liberated devotees. Because in such association, there is a full chance for hearing, describing, and chanting about the name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all of which are described in Srimad Bhagavatam. So the purpose of association is to hear and describe about the personality of Godhead. On the path of bondage, one eternally undergoes the repetition of birth and death. One who desires liberation from such bondage should join the International Society for Krishna Consciousness
and thus take advantage of the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam from devotees and also explain it to propagate Krishna consciousness.
So to associate with devotees means to hear from devotees. It's called association. Understand that point? Understand. Any questions about that? This is what means to associate. Devotees means to hear from them. Their realization. Guhyam Akyati Prichati. What is the meaning of Guhyam Akyati Prichati? Yes. You heard that? You understood that? What is Guhyam Akyati Prichati? And the other half. Prichati. Prichati means what? Prichati means what? Who knows? Meaning Prichati. Inquire. So those devotee inquires about those confidential realizations. It's called devotee sangha. Last verse. My dear king, I have now described for you this planet Earth, other planetary systems and their lands, varshas, rivers and mountains. I have also described the sky, the oceans, the lower planetary systems, the directions, the hellish planetary systems, and the stars. These constitute the Virata Rupa, the gigantic material form of the Lord, on which all living entities repose. Thus, I have explained the wonderful expanse of the external body of the Lord. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 26th chapter, Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled A Description of the Hellish Planets, completed in the Honolulu Temple of the Panchatattva, June 5th, 1975. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Wait. No, for business is jai. There is a final note by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. Don't be so eager. And it's about 2 pages. So, tidy up. Everyone alive and well? Anyway, at the very least, you're learning about tolerance. So this is a note by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta here. There's a supplementary note written by His Divine Grace, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Maharaj, Prabhupada Ki Jai, in his Gaudiya Bhashya. Its translation is as follows. Learned scholars who have full knowledge of the Vedic scriptures agree that the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are innumerable. These incarnations are classified into 2 divisions called Prabhava and Vaibhava. According to the scriptures, Prabhava incarnations are also classified into 2 divisions, those which are called eternal and those which are not vividly described. In this 5th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, in chapters 3 through 6, there is a description of Rishabhadev, but there is not an expanded description of his spiritual activities. Therefore, he is considered to belong to the 2nd group of Prabhava incarnations. Got it? Anyway, I'm not going to go with much explanation here. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, chapter 3, verse 13, it is said, this is a Sanskrit verse quoted, quote, Lord Vishnu appeared in the 8th incarnation as the son of Maharaj Nabhi, the son of Agnidra, and his wife Meru Devi. He showed the path of perfection, the Paramahamsa stage of life, which is worshipped by all the followers of Varnashram Dharma. That's the end of the quote from the 1st canto. Rishabh, personality of Godhead, and his body is spiritual, Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Therefore, one might ask how it might be possible that he passed stool and urine. Even Lord Chaitanya passed stool and urine in one pastime we hear. The Gaudiya Vedanta Acharya Baladeva Dabhushana has replied to this question in his book known as Siddhanta Ratna, first portion, text 65 through 68. Imperfect man call attention to Rishabhdev's passing stool and urine as a subject matter for the study of non-devotees who do not understand the spiritual position of a transcendental body. In this 5th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam 5.6.11, the illusioned and bewildered state of the materialist of this age is fully described. Elsewhere in the 5th canto, 5.5.19, Rishabhdev stated, Idham Shadiram Mamadur Vibhavyam. This body of mine is inconceivable for materialists.
This is also confirmed by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 11. This is a quote. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. In fact, when Rishabdev passed Urine and Stool, it was fragrant for 80 miles. So if anyone says he's God, just go in the bathroom after he's passed Urine and Stool, and you understand that he's not God. The human form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is extremely difficult to understand. And in fact, for a common man, it is inconceivable. Therefore, Rishabdev has directly explained that his own body belongs to the spiritual platform. This being so, Rishabdev did not actually pass stool and urine. Even though he superficially seemed to pass stool and urine, that was also transcendental and cannot be imitated by any common man. Because it was fragrant, so you can't imitate that. It is also stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that the stool and urine of Rishabdev were full of transcendental fragrance. I can see someone deluded saying, this is transcendental fragrance, therefore you can understand it. Such as the delusion of some conditioned life. One may imitate Rishabdev, but he cannot imitate him by passing stool that is fragrant. That's a very important point. The activities of Rishabdev, therefore, do not support the claims of a certain class of men known as Arhat, who sometimes advertise that they are followers of Rishabdev. How can they be followers of Rishabdev when they act against the Vedic principles? Shukadeva Goswami has related that after hearing about the characteristics of Lord Rishabdev, the king of Komka, Venka, and Kutaka initiated a system of religious principles known as Arhat. These principles were not in accord with Vedic principles, and therefore they are called Pashanda Dharma. The members of the Arhat community consider Rishabdev's activities material. However, Rishabdev is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he is on the transcendental platform, and no one can compare to him. This is the last paragraph. Well, Rishabdev personally exhibited the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.6.8. Dabhanalas tabhanam alilehana sahatena dadaha. At the conclusion of Rishabdev's activities, an entire forest and the Lord's body were burned to ashes in a great forest fire. In the same way, Rishabdev burned people's ignorance to ashes. He exhibited the characteristics of a Paramahamsa in his instructions to his sons. The principles of the Arhat community, however, do not correspond to the teachings of Rishabdev. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana remarks that in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is another description of Rishabdev, but that Rishabdev is different from the one described in this canto. End of the 5th canto. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. I don't know why Srila Bhaktisiddhanta felt that particular point of grave importance. Perhaps because of his mission of attacking anything that was opposite. So there we go, that's the end of the 5th canto. And we'll guess we'll start the 6th canto tomorrow. Gaur Premanandi, hey, hey, whoa. This garland smells really nice.